The truth. Welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Monday, September 27th, 2021. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. I'd like to remind everyone, RBN is listener-supported, folks. Please donate whatever is manageable, and for every $100 donation, or more, you get your choice of a high-quality RBN t-shirt in a size of your choice or an official RBN coffee mug. Both excellent ways to spread the word about RBN and free speech. So, whatever you can, folks, whatever you can manage, whenever you can manage, the listeners here are the only way we manage to keep everything running here, keep all the bills paid. The listener support is primarily our means of doing that. We have a few sponsors, but it is the listeners who keep everything paid, I can tell you. And free speech cannot exist without being funded by we, the people. So please help ensure RBN continues broadcasting this uncensored content well into the future. You can use PayPal on the RBN website donate page. You can call our RBN staff to donate via credit or debit card at 800-724-2719, extension 3. Or you can mail in that donation, cash, check, money order, to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. And we greatly appreciate it, folks. This being a Monday, I do have my regular Monday co-host, hailing from across the pond, an Irishman living in London, Paul Edward Stevenson. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Richard. How's it going? It's great to be with you.
Yes, yes. Good to be with you. I really enjoyed your interview with William Rapillum on your show last night, by the way. It was a good chat for sure. And we always appreciate your...
Oh, good.
And yeah, and we always appreciate your perspectives, of course, from across the pond there on all these topics here. You're an excellent resource to have here at RBN, and most certainly one of our rare treasures from Europe. And so, what are the updates here this Monday? I mean, is England jolly again yet?
I was hoping you were going to bring up the jolliness of England. England is even less jolly than usual, because there's the whole country's going crazy. There's panic buying over fuel, and it's a very real problem. And I don't know. I mean, the media leaked, or I shouldn't say leaked, but there's now talk of, you know, who leaked this stuff, but the media basically started talking about fuel shortages, and as human nature is, that's all it took to get the ball rolling, where people go out, and you know, it's just a self-perpetuating thing then, because everybody knows, you know, regardless of whether there's fuel shortages or not, as soon as you get people en masse, you know, it snowballs, where people think, you know, well, I better get some fuel. And then other people then want to go and get some fuel because they realize everyone else is getting some fuel. So regardless of whether there is a fuel shortage or not, once you have that mass hysteria and sort of, you know, mindset that kicks in, you really have to go and try and get some fuel because you know that there's not going to be much left if people, do you know what I mean? If people just keep panic buying, it's kind of irrelevant. Once they announce that there's potentially fuel shortages and you get the initial response where people start panic buying, then everybody has to go out and compete against everybody else. And that's kind of what's happened. And I heard news today that BP may have leaked this idea that there's fuel shortages. Now, if that's true, there should be some sort of repercussions for BP, because I can tell you, BP's share price has gone up dramatically since last week. And in fact, it's gone up. Let me see. Now, that is obviously the most cynical way of looking at it, but somehow this got out in the media that there was fuel shortages. And it's not that there actually is fuel shortages. What this comes down to is that there's a lack of HGV drivers delivering the fuel. So this is actually, and of course you're getting fingers pointed all over the place, and there's been politics at work all over the place, and this has brought out the Remainers in the EU from the woodwork. I don't know why these people get airtime as if it's relevant. We've left the EU now, so who cares? But, you know, all the Remainers have said, oh, see, we told you so. We got rid of all the European drivers from the EU. All the Eastern Europeans have gone back. We've got no one to drive the, you know, the lorries to deliver the fuel. But from what I understand, this is nonsense, because this is a problem which is ubiquitous across Europe. France, Poland, Germany are all having similar problems in much bigger numbers than ours. But yet the bitter Remainers love to use any opportunity, any problem that may occur to blame it on Brexit. But it is a real problem, because apparently, I took a few notes on it, there's 36 million vehicles in the UK, far too many for the roads and the infrastructure, but that goes back to, that's another problem with immigration. And there's 2 billion litres of storage. Now, some industry experts said that's far more than the industry can cope with. Presumably, it means that's far more cars who need petrol than the 2 billion litres that we have in storage. Now, we're talking about bringing in military assistance to drive these trucks. There's other knock-on effects, is what I heard. Even ambulances have been affected. Now, that's a big problem. If ambulances can't fill up their trucks. Also, you'd have to suggest that police cars need to fill up their cars, don't they? The government's response to this is they're talking about offering 3 months temporary visas to 5,000 European drivers. Now, we would obviously be cynical, Richard, when we have any of these sorts of crises that occur, and then we end up importing more immigrants as a result. And also they're talking about training 4,000 new recruits. Some in the government are pointing fingers at the haulage industry itself for not wanting to pay for training and other problems. But this is also potentially and probably likely in part also as a result of the lockdowns, because you haven't had people training. It takes a couple of weeks, you know, in the classroom to train before you can be a qualified HGV driver. So those training classes and sessions haven't taken place over the last 18 months because of the lockdowns. Retailers have said, this is how bad it is, that up to 90% of outlets in and around London are out of fuel, completely out of fuel. And as I say, there's fingers being pointed all over the place. The government's blaming the transport and haulage sector itself. The whinging Remainers who will never get over the Brexit are blaming Brexit. So it's all, again, it's just all a bit of a mess. This all started on Thursday evening. I think the first media story came out about potential shortages. I actually thankfully reacted knowing this hysteria was coming down the tracks, because as I say, it's just a self perpetrating thing. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, whether there is shortages or not. Once everyone starts to go out, you know, panic buying, that's, you need to get, you know, you need to get your fuel or you'll be left behind. So I mean, I went and spent almost £100 on fuel on Friday. Filled up my car, filled up whatever jerry cans I have, so I'm okay. I've got enough probably to keep me going for a month, you know.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, it's similar then to the panic buying we had with the, let's see, it was toilet roll and also hand sanitizer, I think like rubbing alcohol a bit maybe, were the things mostly last year, more than we've seen this year. I mean, I read somewhere it was already experiencing a bit of a shortage of some of those paper products. And as far as the amount of workers that are, well, I don't know. I mean, we have the COVID relief checks, all the unemployment benefits, you know, because they're saying that we've never had this in the past, simultaneously having such a supply shortage and worker shortage. And it it could be various things. I mean, you know, that, yeah, there could be the people who are just looking for other types of work. They're used to these benefits now after the COVID relief started. And then you have to wonder, though, how much of it is just due to the inflation. I mean, I was reading some amazing figures on how much just the cargo ships coming overseas have jumped like 8 times the price since a year and a half ago. That, if that translates to the rest of the economy, I mean, it's going to destroy people. Imagine if everything you bought at the grocery, even your monthly bills, imagine if everything were 8 times what it is now. I mean, that would destroy everyone. That would destroy.
I know. And the problem, exactly. And part of the problem is that the Federal Reserve and, you know, are invested in these shortages and supply chain problems because they're blaming inflation on it. They're saying this is a temporary problem, inflation's transitory because of these supply chain problems. And that's always worrying when you get an organization which is as powerful as the Fed invested in, you know, a narrative that these supply chain problems are, you know, the temporary cause of inflation. Well, you know, they can pull all sorts of strings, and, you know, because they don't want the genie out of the bottle, you know, that this is not transitory inflation, because once that narrative does get out, it's going to dramatically affect the markets, and they are going to be, you know, forced to have a serious look at either interest rates or to acknowledge, you know, that inflation is a real phenomenon, and how are they going to react to that and all the rest of it. So, but they are blaming, you know, and the markets are believing them, that this is a transitory problem, much of it caused by these supply chain bottlenecks, which is are as a result of the lockdowns. Now, some of them are as a result of the lockdowns. There's no doubt in my mind that if you've got 18 months of lockdowns and people aren't training, you know, in the same numbers to become HGV drivers, then that's going to, you know, in part cause a problem in the numbers of people driving those trucks which supply the petrol, because apparently there is no shortage of actual fuel. It's just that we're having a shortage of drivers to deliver the fuel. And actually, some of the haulage companies are offering, like, you know, quite attractive salaries now. They've increased their salaries for driving these lorries. I mean, I looked on just out of interest. There was one company I saw, they're offering between £3,500 and £4,000 a month to drive these. So you never know, Richard. We could be doing beyond the official narrative from a big truck in the next few months.
Yeah, I noticed one story this morning, though. Governments to massively increase immigration to replace unvaccinated workers with immigrants. The UK, they're talking about specifically, the UK needs nearly 2 million workers. I just Skyped you that article, too, by the way. And it, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Could that be part of the... just suiting all these agendas simultaneously? I mean, more compliant immigrant population. And
that's really interesting as well. Yeah. It never stops. You know, there's always, you know, part of the, I think the main reason that, that most of the people in this country, particularly up in the north of England, voted to get out of the EU was to stop free movement of people. Now, the Eastern Europeans are obviously not brown people or sub-Saharan Africans, but they came in here in huge numbers, and it was undesirable, and they lowered the tone, a lot of them. And it doesn't, you know, because they're coming from ex-communist countries. I used to live in, you know, a place called Harrow, and there's so many Romanians and other Eastern Europeans up there. And, you know, they're selling you counterfeit goods in the street. They're offering, you know, the girls are offering you sex. There's like drunks on the street listening to loud music and, you know, Romanians and other Eastern Europeans. I mean, who wants that? And, you know, it causes competition for schools, jobs, dentists, doctors. They all got access to the NHS. Without having paid anything into it, you know, they have no history here. And, you know, it's so we got out of the EU, and immediately as soon as this thing happens, oh, we're going to have to get 5,000 new, you know, temporary visas. Well, you can be guaranteed it's not going to be 5,000. It's not going to be temporary, probably. And it's going to be a lot more people than, you know, than just for driving HGV lorries. But and then just as you say, oh, we have to import workers who are prepared to take the vaccine. There's always everything that you look at always results in more people coming in all the time. Every single time there's more people. They've always got some angle to bring people in here, you know?
I see a couple of tweets that they included with this. It was an article from the Daily Mail on that they had, but then they showed a couple tweets. One was Lauren Southern, so I guess it was on Imgur, she posted it. Weird how they always use white children in the thumbnail when they tell us we need to have less children, isn't it? Even weirder how they then tell us we need to flood our countries with migrants to stop population decline, isn't it? And just two like images and stories from The Guardian side by side examples. Stefan Malnew. Another one. Whites were lied to about having fewer children. It was about the environment, they said, saving the planet. So whites dutifully had fewer children. Now it's, oh, you had too few kids, so we need to import millions of people from the third world. And he says, bait and switch from hell.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is intolerable, and, you know, it never stops. It never ceases. There's always programs and initiatives to diminish white populations, to, you know, replace the, you know, the particularly the northern European you know, countries, Germany, France, you know, Denmark, the UK, Ireland. Some of that's partly because some of the other countries in the Eastern Bloc have got, you know, they aren't so soft on immigration, and they're prepared to protect their borders, like Hungary and places like that, and Poland. But you know, it's devastating what's happening, you know, just demographically in the European nations, and something's got to be done about this. I mean, it's just untenable at the rate it's going, you know.
Have you heard about China banning cryptocurrencies? I mean, do you have any theories on this? I mean,
put it this way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, I just had a follow-up question, but no, please.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with Bitcoin. You know, governments can ban that very, very easily. And, you know, the Bitcoin community got very excited about some little, you know, silly little irrelevant country in South America because they, you know, they've made Bitcoin as part of their, you know, they're accepting Bitcoin as part of their sort of national currency. But I haven't heard them, you know, mentioning the fact that one of the biggest superpowers, and probably likely to be the biggest superpower in the next century, has actually banned it. You know, if China can ban it, then if the Western governments decide that it's a threat to their fiat system or their, you know, digital currencies, which is probably inevitable, sadly, then they'll ban it as well. And, you know, this great reset, we spoke about it before, this great reset will probably emerge out of the ashes of this just monstrosity of a debt bubble collapsing. When this thing does collapse, it'll be like, when this thing collapses economically, and it's going to be like an economic 9/11, you know, and you're in New York and those buildings are coming down. That's what it's going to be like.
Mm-hmm. And Catherine Austin Fitz, she's been a significant insider for years. And yeah, she points to how this is all about the centralized digital currencies of these private central banks. We'll be right back, folks. Stick around.
Yeah, and the social credit scores.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Extendivite 7-herb formulation is approved to help maintain cardiovascular health and help lower blood lipid levels in adults. Extendivite is made from hawthorn, garlic, valerian, cayenne, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, and milk thistle. The herbs in Extendivite have been chosen for their ability to help with overall health. Many people have reported improved energy and stamina in just a few months. If you think you could feel just a little bit better, then Extendivite may just be for you. Extendivite is an all-natural supplement. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we have been building our online store. Well, we have been focusing on bringing you the best talk show host in the country. Here at Republic Broadcasting Network, we also want our listeners to have products they can use every day and in times of emergency. We have added new products each week to our store. Your support of this network, plus products at the best prices, is a win-win situation. Check out our new store. Go to our website, republicbroadcasting.org, and click on the online store located at the top of our website. Together, we can continue to grow RBN and help our listeners prepare for the future. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on our online store or call us.
800-724-2719, extension 3. 800-724-2719, extension 3.
We are back, folks. Beyond the official narrative, Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with my Monday co-host, Paul Edward Stevenson. And Paul, I have to tell you, I've been giving a lot of thought, of course, the past year and a half to the social credit score you brought up when we were fading to the break there, and these digital currencies we've been hearing about for a while. I suspected, I don't mean to toot my own horn, but like March, April of last year, I was already suspecting that the whole COVID severity was exaggerated and covering for an economic situation. And I seem to be more and more spot on as time goes on. And of course, if you look at just what Event 201 told us, what the World Economic Forum say on their own website regarding the Great Reset, and then listen to Catherine Austin Fitz over at Solari and all that she has to confirm these theories we've had for so long. As far as the cryptocurrencies, though, I mean, you know, I've always put off bothering to get familiar with it, familiarize myself, get a digital wallet, do some initial transactions. I understand the basics of how there's a public and private key and all that, but I just, you know, I really didn't know what to make of cryptocurrencies, the current ones which exist out here, and I just didn't get into it until I had a better impression of if it was a force for good, basically, or not, as simple as that, simplistic as that may sound. But no, really, like this article, Why China Banned Crypto, kind of dovetails with some others here I have. How We Know Bitcoin is a Force for Good is another article over at Zero Hedge. Let's see, it was from bombthrower.com originally. But anyway, cryptos are the antidote to repressive central bank digital currencies, they suggest. Another article here at Zero Hedge, central bank digital currencies, a future of surveillance and control, originally at the Bullion Star, bullionstar.com. And I'm hearing about how much different these central bank digital currencies are going to be from the ones which exist now, including basically the ability for them to decide who gets to make a transaction at this moment or not, and the nature of it, what you're trying to attain with it, you know, or purchase or whatever, and you know, how much, and your social credit score, your carbon footprint now is being discussed heavily everywhere. And so I think that, yeah, the amount of, I mean, you even have somewhat anonymity, don't you, with the current digital currencies. I mean, there's a digital wallet. So how much of your identity is out there when you're using those? Because they make it sound like a lot more tracking and inability to conceal who you are, or just without having your whole digital profile for anyone to have access to whenever you make transactions, if the central bank digital currencies come around. Right now, what is the state of them with the digital wallet and all that?
Well, I think, I mean, that is the appeal you see of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, that they're decentralized and that, you know, that there's no kind of footprint of transactions, which is why, you know, one of the reasons that they'll use to clamp down on it and or ban it is that it's a hotbed for, you know, organized crime and big drug dealers and drug barons and this type of thing, and maybe even human trafficking or all sorts of stuff, right? But if they ban it and actually make cryptocurrency illegal, like China have done, then that's obviously going to deter a lot of people from using it. I mean, some people are might just continue to use it, but if you could actually be thrown in prison or receive a hefty fine for using, you know, cryptocurrency, then a lot of people are going to stop using it, which is going to collapse the price of it. And if China can ban cryptocurrency, so can any government. And the reality is that a lot of people are not actually using crypto for, you know, for transactional purposes or buying crypto. A lot of people are buying crypto to speculate on it and to gamble on it because there's money to be made on it. And a lot of people have made money on it, and a lot of people have lost money on it and will lose money on it. I mean, the problem with Bitcoin as well is it's so volatile. I mean, what is it now? It dropped from 50, went up again to 52,000, so it didn't hit its all-time high of 65, and then in the space of like 24 hours it dropped to 42,000. It's very, very difficult to transact in a currency that has that much volatility. You know, I mean, if you buy a car, for example, on a Tuesday and Bitcoin's at 52,000 and the car dealer's accepting, you know, Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin drops by 10,000 the following day, I mean, this is not a very, you know, it's not very a stable way of conducting transactions.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, no, that is a monkey wrench in the gears of using it to liberate us. Well, we'll be back after the bottom of the hour, folks. Stick around.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news. Real talk. Real people. Because you can handle the truth. Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from simplycleanfoods.net, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters. Right now, Amazon Prime members will receive fast two-day shipping. Go to simplycleanfoods.net. That's simplycleanfoods.net. But do it today.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Are back, folks. Beyond the official narrative, Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with my Monday co-host Paul Edward Stevenson. And Paul, you were just commenting on the current volatility of Bitcoin, making it difficult to use for everyday transactions, less desirable for both consumers and people who are selling that that vehicle or whatever they might be selling, and the fluctuations can act so quickly. So the speculators, those who are profiting the bull market for crypto, as it were, the speculators trying to have a quick profit, turning a buck with them, are really what are the cause. Who are the cause of this problem? The speculators, the speculation in the markets. Just like we've heard so many critique. Even Adolf Hitler had a lot to say about that in Mein Kampf. Just the just the whole speculative nature of the markets are do they really do anything positive whatsoever? And there could be a lot said to eliminate a large portion of what the market consists of. But we should try to get to use these digital currencies while they're still available, I suppose, to understand the differences. If people don't get to know the differences, their first introduction is through the central bank digital currencies. They'll kind of be conditioned from the start to expect that much of, tracking, control, identity, linking in every way, shape, and form. Like you say, even the social credit score eventually, and possibly vaccination status, right?
Yeah. And, those social credit scores, you know, that really does. Then you've got a real problem, because if you're a dissenter to that system, then they can make life very difficult for you. I mean, they already can. They can shut down your bank accounts and stuff like that. But if, you know, there's all sorts of things they can do with the credit score to control people and to, you know, create a two-tier society, a bit like the vaccine passports, where you've got two groups of people, those who are compliant and those who are, you know, outliers and dissenters, and then they can make life incredibly difficult for the dissenters. And this, of course, is incredibly coercive, and it makes life very, very difficult. It'll diminish the numbers of people who are, you know, dissenters, because it's human nature that people, various people will have their limits as to how much they will dissent, depending on how inconvenient and difficult things get, which then causes it, you know, eventually makes it more difficult for the people who are holding out, and it just applies more pressure. But back to the crypto. I mean, crypto has been volatile since the start. I mean, crypto, it's really, really volatile, and it can drop. It can have a drop like that where it just goes from 52,000 to 42,000, which is to say, obviously, makes it very difficult, you know, to transact in as a stable currency. But also largely, yeah, people are speculating, and it's not just the big whales who are invested in, you know, a lot of these pump and dumps and stuff like that. You've got a lot of just your average person who's trying to make a few bucks on crypto, and that's understandable. And I understand, you know, the attraction to it. There's a FOMO element to it, and you know, if there's money to be made in crypto, people want to make it. But my point is, I don't think the majority of people who buy crypto are actually buying it to transact in it, because there's very limited transaction, capability in it anyway, in terms of how it's been adopted. And the Bitcoin community make a huge, big deal out of every little, step towards, you know, acceptance in the broader transactional landscape. And, as I say, I think most people are just are speculating in it, really, you know? I mean, I kind of understand the attraction to it, but I mean, to me, I don't even know really what is it? I mean, it's not, you know, people, they try and compare it to gold and silver. Well, if I buy gold and silver, I can receive gold, and I can look at something which is intrinsic value. So, I mean, I'm quite ambivalent really when it comes to Bitcoin, you know?
Mm-hmm. I just think that if everyone has at least done a couple transactions with it, understands what it includes and what it does not include, you know, the basis of the wallet, the keys, and just how much it is not centralized, as you point out, that people will recognize all the differences in these central bank digital currencies and say, wait, I don't really like that. I like this over here I've used in the past. Let's stay with this. You know, and if people never recognize that, just like a republic or a high trust society, if someone's never really been exposed to it, they won't know what they're missing.
Yeah, but it's still back to that thing again. If the European Central Bank, and the Federal Reserve decide that Bitcoin is a threat to their monopoly, then they will ban it. They've already been talking about it. You know, Christine Lagarde and of the head of the IMF and things like that have been, you know, over a year ago have been talking about, sanctions and restrictions and restraints on cryptocurrency, you know. So, mm-hmm. You know, you're probably better you're probably better buying silver and burying it in your back garden. They can't really get to that as easily, you know. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how it pans out, you know.
I'm not suggesting have a large amount of it. I'm just suggesting, you know, get a tiny bit just to have done a couple transactions. So if everyone has done that, and resist storing your wealth in it, certainly I'd say gold and silver physical is what I'd recommend to people if they really want to store any considerable amount of wealth. But as far as the Evergrande situation, to switch gears a little, I mean, they're saying that Chinese banks make up 4 out of the 5 largest banks globally. All right, the big four having around $14 trillion in total assets. So Evergrande's shock is significant, but pales in comparison to the total amount of potential debt implosion we may see soon, you know, across China's highly intertwined real estate and banking industry. Over at the Fed, the chairman Powell tried to downplay this massive development and its potential as a catalyst for a U.S. economic crisis, saying the Evergrande situation seems very particular to China, which has very high debt for an emerging economy. Corporate defaults in the U.S. are very low right now. You wouldn't worry that it would affect global financial conditions through confidence channels. But
corporate defaults are very low because they never let them default. They keep bailing them out.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah, no, I mean, but this even goes on to observe this article. What you might find unexpected, wouldn't you think Powell would be happy about any economic news that isn't talking about our 30-year high inflation? They're saying he's whistling past the graveyard, basically, that a collapse on the other side of the world, destabilizing his carefully engineered illusion of prosperity, couldn't happen. It's the last thing he wants, of course. And, you know, it.
Well, they're always looking for something.
It's going to trickle. Australia, they're already saying the property market there, prices have been skyrocketing, even during the pandemic, skyrocketing, but global real estate crisis conditions might be trickling into Australia already from the Evergrande and larger Chinese reaction response to it. So I don't know.
They're always looking to blame somebody. They're always looking to blame China now for this bubble and the mess that they've caused. You know, they're always trying to create one smokescreen or one scapegoat after the other to blame this collapse on, because they know most people haven't got a clue about anything, so they can just like blame the coronavirus, and then they can blame China for this Evergrande situation. I mean, they're always there's constant finger pointing going on at China for pretty much everything, you know.
And I didn't get to the shortages like the supermarkets. People are finally starting to see it the most, and the prices haven't even really fully kicked in yet for people to see what we're going to deal with the inflation this coming winter. I'd say
food now, you know.
Yeah, I'd say brace yourself, things that aren't that perishable. And that was the one where I was reading about these shipping containers hikes in prices. It just seems insane. To go from $2,000 a year and a half ago to $1,600, $16,000, from $2,000 to $16,000 that it currently is for these giant shipping containers, you know, to ship overseas. That, is 8 times the price. Yeah. I mean, but that is due to other factors as well. So that doesn't mean necessarily this next year or two we're going to see everything jump 8 times in price. But it you know, at least even a fraction of that would destroy a lot of people.
Yeah, and of course, it's the big fish that can handle this. It's the Amazons of this world that are able to, absorb those kind of price hikes. Whereas smaller companies who are importing and exporting, they just can't afford to compete with that. So again, it's this attack on the middle class. It's a wealth transfer, because the bigger you can actually, you know, there are bidding wars going on for those containers
and more bailouts.
Breaks
for the biggest companies. Go on.
I mean, if you're an Amazon of this world, then you know you can bid for those containers that are available. But if you're a smaller guy, then you're pushed out. You can't compete with that, you know.
Yeah, and this is this example was a 40-foot container from Shanghai to New York, $2,000 a year and a half ago, and now 16. $1,000, according to Bank of America.
Yeah.
From what I understand, incidentally, from what I understand, the Bank of America's, I'm told, are all owned by China, actually, the Chinese banking system, and it's just called Bank of America, the ones we have in the States here. I've never gone ahead and tried to confirm that, but I wouldn't be surprised. And it's, but yeah, no, it's not like China is behind. I mean, I mentioned Catherine Austin Fitz earlier, and Catherine Austin Fitz mentions these global elite, basically the banking system, a global elite, you know, largely nearly all Jewish for that matter. But, you know, regardless, these people definitely need artificial scarcity, engineered scarcity, combined with the COVID fear to bring in the digital medical passports, which will morph into these social credit score and digital central bank currency passports.
Yeah, well, I covered a story last night about George Soros and the China state media referring to George Soros as an economic terrorist.
I loved that. That was great.
Yeah, the son of Satan, because you know, China doesn't play ball the way democratic Western civilizations do. So George feels much more comfortable in democracies where he can manipulate. You know, he doesn't like strong borders and nation states like even communist countries like China, or you know, sort of they are a mix, obviously, of communism and capitalism now, much like, or sort of socialism and capitalism, much like we are here in the West. But George really doesn't like those nations that have borders and don't flood their countries with immigrants and everything else. So he's not going to get on well with China, and China, of course, recognize him for the economic terrorist that he is. I mean, the guy is a total criminal.
Well, yeah,
he's 91. Why won't this guy just die?
Oh, well, I'm sure they have access to a bit better health care and life-extending technologies than we do. But, yeah, certainly, I mean, China is not restricted by a lot of the politically correct taboos that are used to further enslave us in the way they use all of these social agendas, social justice agendas.
Yeah. Yeah, and they pointed the finger at him, which is correct, I believe, for that typical sort of Soros and Jewish behavior of funding revolutions. So they blamed him for the situation in Hong Kong, which is always to sell it as, you know, these poor people who are under the tyranny of these authoritarian governments, and they need to be freed up and put into a democracy, you know, where it's all so free over here in the democratic West, isn't it, Richard?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So free. You know, I noticed on the totalitarian update front, no electricity, no money, no license by October in Canada if you don't have the QR code. We're hearing with one, a whistleblower from a video, you could call it. In Italy, they're saying, and possibly coming to many nations soon, Italy's ordering companies not to pay unvaccinated workers. So they're afraid to fire them, even though I'm even seeing a lot of claims that people fired for being unvaxxed aren't necessarily going to going to have anything to stand on as far as unemployment. But we have Italy ordering companies not to pay unvaccinated workers. You know, this is as far as a positive note, I should add something positive. Over 3,000 doctors and scientists have signed a declaration accusing COVID policymakers of crimes against humanity. And as far as some of the places who are rejecting all of this, there might be some they're missing from this list here, I've heard. But was it Croatia? I think I heard. Estonia, Croatia, maybe. Was it Croatia, I think. Yeah, who are totally pushing back, not acknowledging anything COVID at this point. I believe that was the one I mentioned last week, Croatia. But this
one mentions... Do you have a link for that, Richard, that story of the doctors of 3,000? Could you send me that?
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. Now, this mentions Sweden, Texas, Florida, South Dakota, Denmark, Brazil, Norway, and Belarus now have no COVID restrictions. So that's if all of those places are rebelling, that's certainly a good start. And you know, I would just hope that that grows and that they don't get squashed sooner than later, right?
Indeed. Yeah, I think that, you know, I've always said, you know, they take a risk with these things, and you know, they don't always get it, you know, all their own way. And I think they've bitten off more than they can chew with a lot of this stuff, and they've overreached. And just before we come to the end as well, I sent you that story in Global Research last night, which I thought was a good story. From a lay person's point of view, the whole vaccine thing, you know, when you get into the science of it and stuff like that, about about how it's affecting our bodies and all that. I mean, I thought it was a reasonably easy article to understand in terms of what these vaccines actually do on our anatomy and the molecular level and all that sort of stuff. And it said the conspiracy theorists were right. It is a poison death shot. And,
yeah. I wanted to address that article you sent. No, continue. Because, yeah, I've heard everything in that article. I've been hearing elsewhere the last year and a half as well. So I would corroborate from other sources that's all correct. Yeah, continue if you want to highlight some of what you read in it.
Yeah, well, it sort of simplifies it. You know, it brings up simple questions like, did the regulators at the FDA know that all previous coronavirus vaccines had failed in animal trials, and that the vaccinated animals became either severely ill or died? Yes, they did. Did they know that previous coronavirus vaccines had a tendency to, quote, enhance the infection and, quote, make the disease worse? Yes, they did. Did Dr. Anthony Fauci know that coronavirus vaccines had repeatedly failed and increased the severity of the infection? Yes, he did. So it breaks down a lot of these simple things here, and it does go into, you know, it talks about how these things affect spike proteins. And this seems to be a consistent theme that I've watched some of these doctors and immunologists and virologists who are explaining this thing to try and make it understandable to the layperson, that these spikes in proteins, these are a problem, and they cause blood clots, leaky blood vessels, and that type of thing. And it says, did the FDA know that Pfizer had identified vaccine-associated enhanced disease, including vaccine-associated enhanced respiratory disease, as an important potential risk? It says, yes, they did, but they did not demand Pfizer fix the problem. So, but of course, you see, the government under this Emergency Powers Act for these coronavirus things, they wavered liability to these pharmaceutical companies. So it was an opportunity for them to get very rich. And it seems that, you know, there are much more nefarious purposes going on, because these people are obsessed with population reduction and all that type of thing. And it's quite a sobering article to read. It's in Global Research, Michael Chodorowski's site, and it's called "The Conspiracy Theorists Were Right. It is a poison death shot." And it's quite educational, to say, for the layperson. I mean, I'm not someone who, you know, innately understands these types of biological issues. I'm not a trained virologist like most of us aren't, but I thought it was quite helpful. You know, it's a reasonably lengthy article, but it certainly helped me to understand a lot more about these things, you know, on a kind of a biological level, and also just the interaction between governments and what the FDA knew and all that type of stuff, you know.
Yeah, and even just from the first couple of paragraphs there, it packs a lot of information in a small amount of space. So, I mean, a lot of people who haven't been keeping up with this as much as some of us in the independent media, they could get a lot from checking that one out. And again, that is "The Conspiracy Theorists Were Right" is It is a poison death shot at globalresearch.ca. There was an article here on, Brazil, and this was unvaccinated Brazilian president Bolsonaro decreeing socialism and vaccine passports at the UN General Assembly. So he's speaking out at the UN General Assembly against the vaccine passports. That's significant, you know, the Brazilian president. And so that would be something that I would love to see a chain reaction to as well, as mentioning those nation states of the U.S. and countries who are standing the ground at this point.
Well, Exactly. And I mean, they've had to shelve it over here as well. You know, there was a massive public backlash, and they've reserved, you know, the right to, you know, look at it again if things get really bad. But, you know, the Conservative government that are pretty, you know, rapid U-turn on that and said that they were scrapping the idea, you know.
And another article pointing out leading experts saying COVID could be no worse than a cold by next spring. Professor Sir John Bell at Oxford. And, regarding the economy, another just interesting way of putting it, I kind of alluded to this earlier, but this one, I've never seen an economic crisis while the stocks are in a euphoric melt up. That's kind of a way to describe the artificial machinations that are just commonplace at this point. So I don't know. Yeah, we just have a couple minutes. What's it?
Yeah, it's this crack up boom phenomenon. But that's because of all the money printing, because so much of it's going into the stock market, you know.
And over here, I guess there's three votes scheduled next week. Pelosi is talking about how it's going to be just craziness, and these are must pass bills, all three of them, and of course they're going to try to fit as much of their agendas in it as possible. But we just have a couple minutes left here. I mean, if you just want to, I don't know, add whatever else you thought was just important to fit in here, Paul.
I'm just trying to think. I've actually got I should probably mention I've got a new gig coming up. I did a show with Jeremy on filling in for John Stadtmuller, and I spoke to a gentleman called Mark Dankoff, and he does a show with, I don't know whether you know, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. Are you aware of him?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, Synagogue of Satan author.
I remember reading his stuff way back in like 2011 or something like that, you know, and I used to listen to Rents, and you know, I still listen to Rents occasionally, and Eustace Mullins and all those guys were on there, and you know, they were quite pivotal in you know, in my own education and this stuff. But they've got a show coming up on Andrew's network, and I think that goes out on the Rents network as well, and I'm going to be joining him and Mark Dankoff on the first Monday of every month. So tune in for that. That's Andrew Carrington Hitchcock. And I'll be on with Mark Dankoff, who I spoke with on Friday with Jeremy, who's a really cool guy.
Well, excellent. Wow. Yeah, so congratulations. Once a month with them. That should be very interesting to try to check out for sure.
Yeah, it'll be 2 p.m. 2 p.m. on the first Monday, and the first show is going to be Monday, the 4th of October. And it's also good, you know, because for me to get involved with people over here, because I've done so much stuff where, you know, everybody I'm interacting with and doing radio with and stuff is in the U.S. So it's good for me personally as well to be able to network and do some stuff with people over here, you know, obviously with Mark Collett and now Andrew as well, because, you know, it's just good to sort of have some people in the same country that as well that you're doing stuff with, you know?
Yeah, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, yeah, it's a wonderful voice for you to be networking with. That's great news, Paul.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
Please remind us and update us on that then. I can't believe how fast the show went, but a pleasure as always, sir, and have a great week.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Richard. Bye-bye, you too.
And check out Paul Edward Stevenson every Sunday night on RBN, folks, 9 p.m. Central with Last Man Standing. The new broadcast this past. Okay, folks, well, that is the end. I'll look back tomorrow. Please support RBN. Stick around for Patrick Slattery with National Bugle Radio. And we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the EaseOff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EaseOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.